I think the ground is pulling me down. By Smelly.com. From the Homestuck Fan Author Coalition Server. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based on the works of Andrew Hussey. You awake with a start, being pulled from the thick blankets of slumber by a loud, singular smack sound from down the hall above the white noise of the fan. You rub your eyes groggily, glancing at the clock before swinging your feet off the bed and padding half-dead to the kitchen. The halls, though blurry from your sleep-riddled vision, are filled from corner to corner with ironic family photos you made Dirk take with you for your birthday last year. They were expensive, but it was worth it, as they're one of you and your brother's prized possessions. Dirk, you call out as your socked feet hit the cool tile. What was that? You spot him immediately, crouched over something on the floor next to the island. He turns to face you holding a rolled-up magazine. I think I discovered a new species of bug. He gestures for you to come over and look, so you do, despite your obvious confusion. There's a peculiar-looking red splotch on the ground, and you squat next to him to get a closer look. In the mess of dark red, you can see a pulsing purple thing. It's frighteningly big, almost half the size of the palm of your hand, and you can see liquid continuously oozing from it with no signs of stopping. Ugh! You cringe and poke it with a finger. It squelches, and a sticky layer of red coats it as you pull back. You sure it's a bug? Nope. I'm not sure what else it could be, though. It doesn't have legs, nor eyes, for that matter. Dirk turns the newspaper around in his hand, revealing the blotch of mysterious red bug juice where he swatted it. Gnarly. You stand again, wiping your hands on your sleep pants before scratching your face. I brush my teeth. Already walking, you see him nod slightly from the corner of your eye. When you're getting a cup of water from the tap to go with your lunch, you realize the thing is still convulsing crudely on the floor. The puddle of MRBJ has somehow gotten bigger, and the edges of it have begun to dry a sickly rust color. You fill your cup, then walk back to the table, eyeing your brother. You didn't throw it away? You take a bite of your sandwich and he raises an eyebrow. Why would I throw away lunch? No, I mean the bug. You do air quotes. It's kind of making a mess over there, you know? Don't talk with your mouth full. He lightly scolds you before continuing. It didn't seem safe to touch. I'll throw it in the fireplace later. When you give him a look, he adds, with gloves, of course. You nod, then swallow your sandwich properly. Make sure to clean up all the juices before they stain the floor. If you keep ordering me around, I might just make you do it. Dirk starts eating along with you, and the both of you enjoy the rest of your Saturday in relative peace. It's only when Dirk comes home Monday morning that you realize something is really fucking wrong. He's pale, unfocused, and keeps staring at the fireplace with an intenseness that makes you uneasy. Dirk, you start hesitantly, pausing in the slicing of your steak and pursing your lips. You make eye contact through the shades. What's up? He squirms in his seat, paling even further. Nothing much, he responds with faux casualness. Just work as usual. What about you? Anything happened at school? You know what I mean, man. You set your knife down, leaning back in your wooden seat and crossing your arms. I keep telling you, you can talk to me about anything. Your brother clenches his fists around his plastic silverware and shoves a bite of food in his mouth. You relent, staring him down until he swallows his food dryly and places his utensils on his plate. You know Marty? He taps his fingers on the table. The old guy, what about him? Before you can conjure up a million different things that probably happened involving Marty, he starts talking at a mile a minute. He came to work with a bump on his elbow. Didn't say much about it, just that it was itching, and he had a doctor's appointment scheduled for it soon. He takes a steadying breath, tapping his fingers rhythmically on the table. Near the end of the day, he tripped and hit it against the wall, started howling like a motherfucker, and... he trails off, leaving you cruelly on the edge of your seat. It started leaking, and, he struggles to get the words out, but eventually succeeds. A finger clawed out of it like some type of horror movie parasite. You feel the blood drain from your face. We sent him to the hospital, but... Funny joke! You know I don't like that type of shit, Dirk. Stop fucking with me. He keeps silent, eyes focused carefully on an empty space on the table. The realization dawns on you like a freight train, and suddenly your steak doesn't seem as appetizing as it was before. You nudge the plate away from you. You're sure it was a finger. Everyone else saw it too. It wasn't just me. You don't finish your dinner, instead opting to sit in silence at the dining room table. Dirk stands up after a while, you're not sure how long, patting your shoulder and mumbling something about sleep. You go to school the next morning, heavy eye bags weighing you down. Your classes go by like a blur, all melding into one. Usually, you wouldn't be affected by this kind of thing at all, but you have an uneasy, creeping feeling resting heavy on your shoulders at the new information. And you're sure the other kids feel it too. The newly hushed feeling of secretive conversation coats everything, including the sharp corners of the bathroom where you sit in a stall and think for an hour before going back to class. Carcat runs up to you after the last bell rings, already talking.
Did you hear about the-
Yeah, my bro told me. His franticness somehow puts you at ease, and you can feel the knot in your jaw unraveling.
Really? I've only heard rumors.
I guessed so, you sigh, pushing the main doors open and walking into dry air. If you want to try and talk to him about it, feel free. I just can't guarantee you'll want to say anything. He heaves a sigh.
I guess I'm just wondering if it's contagious. He hasn't come back from the hospital yet, so they might be quarantining him or some shit.
Damn, really? I would have assumed he'd be out by now. Do you think he's a zombie? Carcat laughs, and you feel yourself start to smile as well.
We better hope not. If there's an apocalypse starting in this town, I think we're fucked.
You snort at him, then nod him a goodbye as he goes his separate way home. He only lives a few houses down from yours. Your sneakers scuff against the concrete steps of your patio as you walk up, shoving open the unlocked door with an undignified grunt and closing it back up behind you. Dirk hasn't gotten home, you observe, eyes tracing over the empty parking lot through the window. You purse your lips, then throw your backpack down on your bed and immediately get to doing everything but your homework. When your brother comes home, he returns with nothing but the things he came with. He tells you how more of his co-workers got the bumps, how they've all been to the hospital, but they won't take any more people with the same symptoms as Marty. It's peculiar, you think. You don't notice the four bumps slowly growing on his back, all fully covered by his nice leather jacket that he refuses to take off, even in the summer heat. A few days later, you wake up to a persistent knocking at the front door. Once it's clear the person won't let up and Dirk isn't going to get it for you, you drag yourself out of bed and slouch to the door, still in your pajamas. As the door creaks open, Carcat stares back at you, much to your surprise. You blink rapidly as an attempt to wake yourself up a little more.
Hey man, what's up?
Hey. He's in his sleep clothes as well, you realize as he scratches his arm.
Do you mind if I come in?
You stare at him.
Yeah, of course.
You run a hand through your hair, opening the door enough for him to walk past.
What's this about?
You think on it for a little longer than mumble.
What time is it even?
They're canceling school. You close the door behind him, and you both walk a little further into the hall.
I don't know for how long, he continues. My brother just got a letter in the mail.
Picking at your nails absent-mindedly, you lead him to the dining room and take a seat, him following suit in the chair next to you.
Damn, lucky us.
You smile, and he returns it weakly. There were more. Incidents, I mean.
Your smile falls and you press your lips together. How many? You ask hesitantly. I don't know the details. All I know is we're not supposed to be going into, like, big crowds of people right now. Huh. Do the adults get work off too, then? Karkat nods once. You nod back, then drum your fingers on the table. You want to stay here for the day, then? I know how you get around your brother. He smiles a real one this time. Sure, Dave. That'd be great. Dirk wakes up to you both taking turns playing Sonic the Hedgehog on your Nintendo 64 in the living room. Hey, bro. You say over your shoulder as you hear his footsteps come in. No school until further notice. Check the mail. You can practically feel his questioning gaze on the back of your head, but even so, you hear the creak of the front door opening and shutting before he comes back, putting the mail on the counter with a thwack. Dirk mumbles something frustratedly about a quarantine notice, then grumbles something incomprehensible and stalks back to his room, presumably to keep sleeping. You let him, the first reason being because he doesn't have work to worry about anymore, and the second being that the man needs every ounce of sleep he can get. You spend the rest of the day with Karkat, him only leaving when the sun begins threatening to set and the sky's bright hues turn a soft orange. You don't doubt that his brother chewed him out for not telling him where he was going, but you also don't doubt that Karkat flipped the other off all the way to his room. The next morning, which when you go to bed expect to be a peaceful, lazy one, is entirely the opposite. You stumble blearily to the sound of people screaming angrily and incoherently, pinching the blinds of your window up an inch so you can see what all the fuss is about. The light of the morning assaults your uncovered eyes, so it takes you a moment to adjust, but when you do, your brows furrow and your jaw drops a half a centimeter. You don't recognize the guy they're dragging across the gravel, and to be quite honest, you don't really want to. What you can recognize about his writhing, agonized form is the open, bleeding wound stretching from his left shoulder to the right side of his lower back. If you hadn't seen the white scraps of the top the guy was wearing, you would have thought it was dyed a dark red. It trails behind him as the people tug him across the rough street, still yelling, not quite at each other. Before you subject yourself to any more of that, you remove your hand from the blind, snatch up your shades, and make a beeline straight to Dirk's room, not even bothering to knock. Dirk! You burst out frantically, shoving your shades on. Outside there! You gotta get up! He blinks awake, hand flying to his shades as he registers your commotion. Putting them on, he sits up and starts walking, following you. What? What's going on? He mumbles, tired but still concerned. You can't bring yourself to answer him verbally, so you practically shove him to the nearest window. He looks confused, opening the blinds before registering what's in front of him and closing them back up immediately. He opens his mouth once, then closes it when nothing comes out. After a moment of almost silence, the commotion outside buzzing more than it should be on the town's days off, he plants a hand on your shoulder. Listen to me, Dave. He starts, face set and orange eyes boring into yours. Stay down, and lock and cover the doors and windows. I'll do the ones upstairs, and I do not want you, under any circumstances, going outside. You hear me?
Bro—
No, Dave, I'm being serious. Do not go outside. He pats your shoulder from his previous grip on it and speeds off towards the stairs. I'll be back, he says quickly over his shoulder, and then he's gone. With nothing else to do, with the feeling of wrong, wrong, wrong oozing into your chest, you do as he says. You even go as far as to put a chair under the handle of your front door, something you learned from Karkat when his brother would try to barge into his room unannounced constantly. The thought makes you sick to your stomach when you go to lock the last window and look out to see Kankri being dragged against the dry and crumbling dirt just like that other man had before. He yells and screams and thrashes, his nasally voice unrecognizable through the cacophony. And that's when you dreadfully notice he has a few extra hands than usual.
They're attached from his wrists, having wrists of their own, scratchy and red and irritated as if something or someone had tried to claw them off only hours before. Someone you recognize, a farmer you remember, follows along close behind him with a shovel in hand. As they stop his trail abruptly, the farmer reels the shovel up and slams the spade into what would be the ulnar artery of one of the many twisting protrusions. Cancri's shrieks flow to an all-time high as blood spurts and stutters until a sickening crack sounds and the hand thumps to the floor. You've seen horror movies? Although they're not as realistic as they should be in order to make them believable, you've always felt uneasy about the unnecessarily over-exaggerated gore featured in them. Seeing someone that you know live through one of these situations rather than an actor in a contained environment is truly rattling. You're not sure what to do other than stand and watch like an idiot. That is, until you spot Karkat clawing through the crowd. Desperately reaching for his brother, something within you breaks, snaps in half like a twig, and you sprint to the door, not at all processing Dirk yelling after you. You rip the chair out from under it, almost splitting it in half, then undo the locks as fast as you can with shaky fingers. You skip the steps of the porch, instead jumping over them, and before you know it, you're by Karkat's side, holding him back from potential danger by the underarms. He thrashes against you, yelling something unintelligible. "Karkat, chill out," you say in his ear. "Come on, man, we gotta go!" Your stalling makes you both fall behind the crowd. The Arizona sun beams down on you, and looking up against Karkat's struggle, you see something you had failed to perceive from your window. A fire, about 10 feet high and 4 feet wide at the base, burns bright, licking at the air with a hunger. At the bottom of it is dark charcoal, some you could recognize as burnt wood, others you can only describe as bodies, reaching out motionlessly and breaking off of themselves into dust in response to the commotion. You suddenly register the smell of burning, burnt meat, and you consider expelling your guts out directly on the boiling concrete. Despite yourself, you take a deep, steadying breath, ignoring the distant screams of your best friend's brother. "Karkat," you state softly, "we need to go." Before he can react, you feel yourself be jerked backwards by your collar. You swing around, ready to sock somebody in the face, then falter when you're met with Dirk's familiar, pinched look. You follow him into the house, Karkat trailing behind limply from the grip you have on his wrist. Dirk barricades the door with a new chair, one that isn't almost broken. Looking around, you see that he's finished locking and covering the windows, something that you failed to do, and all the lights in the house are off. Your brother turns to you, eyebrows low and jaw set. "That was incredibly stupid." He crosses his arms, shifting his gaze from you to Karkat, who's looking pale and not at all there. "Both of you.
Dirk, if I hadn't gotten to them, they would have... I couldn't just...
You could have died, too."
"I'm not who's important right now.
What is wrong with you? You..." Your argument is cut short by Karkat dropping to the floor and screaming. His fingernails scrape and splinter against the wood, the constant string of noises only pausing when he feels the sudden urge to breathe. Karkat writhes. You both watch for a moment, scanning him for non-existent injuries. And when you find none, you look to Dirk for help as he does you. When you notice neither of you have the answers you're looking for, you take initiative, crouching down in front of him.
"Karkat," you mumble. "Hey man, it's gonna be..." Fuck, you can't focus with all the background noise, especially when it's coming from his mouth. You turn to Dirk as a stupidly simple idea forms in your head. You curse yourself for not thinking of it earlier. You should... Can you... Cops? 911? That seems to snap him out of whatever trance he was previously in and nods quickly, dashing to the home phone. Over the course of the next hour, you sit on the floor next to Carcat as Dirk phones the police. Your brother relays what they said to him to you. That since they're a local police department, they can't do much except threaten people into submission, which they said wouldn't help at all, and to be frank, you agree with them, and deploy some ambulances. They're pretty much helpless, is what you get from this, and since you're on the main street of the fires, which is apparently what the rest of the town started calling the giant person-fueled bonfire, they can't send anyone over. Carcat stops screaming and passes out shortly after you and Dirk talk. You don't blame him. Kankri is... dead. Shit, that's the harsh way to put it. You know the relationship was never the greatest, but you can't so much as fathom the pain that Carcat is feeling right now. Just the other day, he was bitching about his brother never shutting up. "That's all he ever does," he'd said. "And all he ever will do. Once people stop taking his word, he'll have nothing left." It was nothing out of the ordinary to either of you. You think he's feeling guilty, although you hate to say it, you would too. Even in his sleep, he looks troubled. Probably nightmares. Burning alive is quite a brutal way to go, after all. After a while, the sickening smell of smoke and cooked meat wafts through the fine cracks in your windows. Without being able to do anything about it, Dirk digs up your old holiday surprise candle and lights it. It smells like peppermint, not surprisingly, and overpowers the scent of death. Good. Baby steps. You decide to get Carcat to some place more comfortable when it's clear he's not going to rouse anytime soon and carry him to your room. It's a bit of a feat, picking him up. You've been slacking off more than you should be since the school year is ending, or it would have been ending if not for the situation at hand. You lay him down gently, gingerly pulling the blankets over him. He looks at least a fraction more peaceful, and if that's not progress, you don't know what is. In all honesty, you're at a loss for what to do. Lowering yourself down to the floor, you heave a sigh and run a hand through your hair. You sit like that for a while, the back of your head against the side of the mattress until you eventually drift off to sleep. When you come to, Carcat has too and is staring at the wall of posters across the room with a dry expression. The dark circles under his eyes are more pronounced than they've ever been. And his eyes don't even flicker towards you. "Carcat," you say in a whisper that's all too soft. The light from the blinds of your window line a square on the floor. He blinks toward you, eyes glistening and face pinching, and you force yourself to look away. He gets up anyway, sits up with the rustle and swish of the blankets and places a hand on your shoulder. You put yours atop it, holding back your own emotions with great effort. Your lower lip wobbles. You both go downstairs, Carcat still following you like a dog, and are surprised to see Dirk at the stove making eggs. He smiles at you, all sympathy and no teeth, and the three of you eat at the table in silence. The eggs taste like sandpaper and salt, but you can't remember the last time you ate something real, so you're grateful at least for the sticky sensation in your mouth to dissipate. You down a glass of water. You have a relatively peaceful day, despite the bleakness of the situation. You and Carcat play Sonic again, though you're the one doing most of the playing, and it's fun for the most part. Dirk stays in his room all day. You're not entirely sure why, but you don't really blame him. The guy's probably tired out of his mind. The morning after, you shoot straight up in your bed, the AC blasting in the uncharacteristic silence. You peel it off of you with vigor, heaving breaths that almost hurt. Carcat isn't there. It's fine, though. He's probably just in the bathroom. It's fine.
Only it's not fine when you look down at your hands and see two bulging red eyes staring back at you. You can see yourself through them, sickeningly enough, and you slide them both closed with the ease of a baby walking for the first time. You're met with peaceful darkness. But it's overshadowed with the feeling of the ability to see through them, through things that aren't yours, that never were in the first place. You knew this would happen. You felt it from the time your brother came home from work that day, that something was going to happen. Maybe not as dreaded as this, but still something. And would it be so much of a stretch to make it not happen? To be rid of its existence with force, no matter how much it'll hurt, to carve it out of your body and leave it burning in the fire that you yourself were separate from? You need to talk to Dirk. The doorknob is hot under your fingers, not your palm anymore. And as you stalk into the hallway, you register the faraway beep of a smoke alarm. The light is awfully pretty. It's moving and flickering and orange coming from downstairs. You're not going downstairs, though. You're just going across the hall. A shame, you think. His room's doorknob is a lot cooler than yours had been. The floor is sticky when you walk in. Your socks cling to the wood floor. Not enough for them to stay there, but just enough to be noticeable. The lights are off. You spot him on the floor facing you. He's at the far end of the room, pale as ever. He hasn't gone outside in a while, has he? You should remind him to sooner or later. Once this whole thing blows over, you flick on the light switch. That was a mistake. The floor is red. Dark red seeps into the floorboards, into the dark stained wood, and into your white socks. It's a puddle stretching from him to the door, rippling at your every step. Hey, you say, but can't hear yourself.
Hey,
you say again anyway. Dirk doesn't respond, doesn't move, doesn't breathe. You take a knee in front of him, gently pushing him onto his stomach. Behind him, previously hidden from you by his carefully thought-out position on the floor, are three severed arms and one stray leg. They're covered in blood at the incision point. And you look back to his unnervingly still form. Four open wounds look back at you. Not bleeding, but still raw. Three smaller ovals. One on the upper left of his back and the others on the upper and lower of the right. A bigger one sits on the bottom left. And with this one you can see each individual layer of skin that was desperately hacked off. The heat from behind you rises. In his hand, his real one. The one still attached to him is a serrated knife from the kitchen. It, too, is soaked in mind-numbing red, so much so that you can see little chunks of flesh still hanging off of it. The flames engulf the door. You don't hear yourself screaming, only ringing in your ears. You cradle his body to yours, blood mixing in the fresh wounds on your palms. Half your vision is gone, you don't care. You wish you could say it doesn't hurt. It does.
yanks you back into your body with a certain intensity you haven't been able to experience at all before this, and before you know it, everything is boiling and everything is horrid. Your skin bubbles over, your eyes melt in your skull, and now all of your vision is gone, and you can feel it, live it. You breathe death and exhale pain, and for how long you're not sure. But after a while, you can feel yourself start to spasm and crack. You can feel your insides, your stomach acid pouring out of you and expelling through what's left of your face, bubbling over just like your aforementioned casing, just like the thing that held you together not too long ago. You can't do anything for a long while except scream. And even then, your vocal cords give out after a certain amount of time. And then you feel nothing. The Homestuck Fan Author Coalition is a place for authors to write, brainstorm, discuss, and collaborate. Link available in description. Suburban Jungle by Michael Guy Bowman. Special thanks to Sakiko. If you would like me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch with me using the contact information on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find links to other stories that I've read, my Discord server, and various ways to support me. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.